You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Six on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you, and pleased to be joined by Michael Musselman, small engine repair specialist, and also part of the crew that went to Afghanistan. You just heard Sergeant Major Zikafoos, but hey, Mike, talk about Brian Zikafoos as the sergeant major. Your thoughts on him, working with him?
Well, okay, it's no shock to anybody. I'm not a big fan of a lot of sergeant majors. They just, to me, in my eyes, they're just, a lot of the guys I ran into just didn't really get it as far as what troop welfare meant and when, you know, taking care of the Marines. They became establishment guys, institutional guys, and a lot of those guys wouldn't put their career on the line to do what was right as far as upholding, Marines that they felt were justified in whatever means. They would take the side immediately as guilt. But Zik was one of those guys that was not the established guy. So I worked, Job was one of them. Job was another great Sergeant Major. Green, who's now the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, MEF Sergeant Major at the time, he's another great guy. But Zik is one of those guys that, I mean, he's not afraid to put on the pack and to go and do it with the Marines. He leads from the front. He leads by example, great human being. And he'll stand up. You know, he'll stand up to the establishment when he feels that someone is being wrong. And, you know, a lot of guys in his position wouldn't do that because of their career. So, yeah, hats off to Zik. He's one of the great men, you know, the Marine Corps today.
Yeah, he's in Southcom right now. And we're supposed to head to AFRICOM, and then they changed it up and sent him down to Southcom. So, he's a fun guy. I think, like most people that tend to travel in Mike's circle, they're funny guys and fun guys to be around. But they're smart, they're intense, and I don't want to say they throw a switch, but there's many facets to their personality, and I think that's what makes them all very different for the most part. But they have certain common threads. One of them is competence in their job, and you can't crack that group of guys if you're not good at what you do. And I don't mean good, if you're not really, really, really good at what you do. And then they also tend to have a little bit of sense of humor and can make it fun. And then the third part, which is the part I think where you draw the line, is will they stand up in a meeting and say the unpopular thing? Will they talk about, will they say, no, yeah, if we're going to war with optics on our rifle, then we're going to qualify with it. And that's what I'm doing as a regimental commander. I don't care what anybody else does. Right? That's what we're doing because we're, that's what the order says. When nobody else is doing it and everybody else is looking sideways like, are you willing to do those kind of stand up and be the guy in the meeting that says, no, I'm not doing that. Right? And if you want to know what I'm doing or you have a problem with it, go talk to him because that's who I work for. Aside from that,
right,
I'm done. And a lot of guys, as Mike says, they you get to a certain rank and you live in a pretty good life, and why jeopardize the franchise? So, but our friends tend not to be like that. And those meetings are pretty interesting. they're pretty interesting too because they can get pretty heated, and which is good. But
like you said, to stand up for what is right, even if it's the most unpopular.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that. I want to ask you about something that's been kind of the theme of the show this morning. And I would say predominantly sergeants and staff sergeants that have heard the program, and the majority of them are out recently, and it's probably happened to me a half dozen times since Christmas, write me emails and say, hey, you know, the Marine Corps you're describing is not the Marine Corps today. The Marine Corps today is suffering from, I'll use one of them's term, selling out to our society. And that is, corporals are now Lance Corporal Second Award. They don't have any tools to affect the Marines' behavior. EMI is now writing an essay or giving a class. That's coercive behavior now. And then the one that email that I remember vividly is, and we have handed our BEQs over to them. They are more akin now to college dorms where we're not allowed to set a foot in or tell them what to do. And it is causing tremendous problems. As a result, they bring their nasty-ass civilian behavior into our Marine Corps as opposed to joining our Marine Corps. And so the stuff you see, and one of them, this is the one I just got recently, the stuff you see relative to Marines United, the poor behavior on there, is them just dragging their civilian shit into the Marine Corps and not embracing what the Marine Corps is.
So
I want to get your opinion of that because
you
were around for that transition of this BEQ now belongs to them.
Okay, so this is that clear cut. Okay, you know you kind of hit the nail, but it's not assimilating, you know, the Marines into the Marine Corps. We've gotten to the point where we used to be saying that it's not about you, it's about the Corps. You know, it's never about you. It's always about the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps is the much bigger picture. So your actions, no matter how small and minute, can have a huge impact. And that's why we need to force those guys to assimilate into that culture of being a Marine, to adopt those warrior ethos that we talk so much about, you know, honor, courage, commitment, and all the other intangible benefits. But as we started getting away from that, because then commanders just got tired of being inundated with these congressional investigations of not letting the Marines have their quilt from home on their bed, not letting them put up posters of their religious beliefs or their music beliefs or their, you know, whatever beliefs they have, you know, contrary to the Marine Corps policy of good order discipline. We got away from that because, again, people were getting tired of getting berated and standing up for what they believed was right. And telling people, hey, no, not in my Marine Corps. And then it just took foothold, and now it's a movement where, again, we reward Marines that don't assimilate into the Marine Corps, that they maintain it's more like a salad bowl. I mean, nothing's mixed. You're all separate people within this, you know, organization doing your own thing. And it's not the Marine Corps thing. And that was going on just as I was left. And General Nicholson, you know, my boss at the time, fought hard against it. Sergeant Major Dave Jobe fought against it. And we all knew the writing was on the wall, man. I mean, we knew what was going to happen if this took foot. And, you know, and as I read more and more, it did. And
okay, let me ask you this. So is it because I think you and I are both hesitant to talk about this a little bit because you sound like, you guys are just old guys who don't know the Marine Corps anymore. The Marine Corps has changed. And one of the things, so I'm hesitant to bring this up because that's what I always think of myself. But one of the things that was written to me was, and I thought really interesting, and it was this, written by a staff sergeant. The last 15 years that we've been at war, that's urgency going to combat has allowed us to be hard on Marines in a way that we historically have been because we had combat looming on the horizon. So there was not a whole lot of bullshit, and guys who were going to war were expected to lead, and that's a pretty high bar. Now that we're not, we're now dealing with the millennials who want it their way. And he said, sadly, the Marine Corps is giving it their way, giving it to them their way, and we are paying for it as an organization. But I just wanted to hear, I mean,
it's
you and...
the ludicrous of that whole argument, because even though the Marine Corps is not at war, the number one mission for the Marine Corps is to prepare for war. Always be ready. Right. You know, when America's least ready, the Marine Corps is the most ready. And, you know, this mentality, this mythology of, you know, since we're not going to war, let's stop training that hardness because our guys, we don't have to be so hard on them. You can't step that up. Then when war looms again, you can't go, okay, let's go back to being hard again.
Right, Mike, you're going to go the way you are, right? And when you're not good.
The way you train in peacetime is the way you fight in wartime.
And when you're not good, the casualty bill is going to get paid.
Yep.
In blood, in dead people. And so I wanted, you know, again, I've heard enough of this that I wanted to, you know, finally ask you about it on the air. Is it a valid criticism that coming off the, and I'll tell you what, and what they all point to is a loss of the barracks and the lawlessness. What they see is living dirty, living disheveled, it being a more of a college dorm than a military, barracks. Is that valid?
No. I mean, it's not surprising to me that, you know, we're having this discussion. This is one of those things, you know, again, we knew it was coming. We know, and the smart people know what it's going to cost to pay, what the price is going to be. And it's sad to see, you know, that this is the discussion that we're having.
Email writes this. Hey, Mac, I'm curious the gunner's thoughts on is Corporal Lance Corporal Second Award now? Is that just the way it is? Do they have any power as a corporal, as an NCO? Mike?
They do if the command backs it. You know, all power is basically given to you based on how much what your backing is. So, I mean, as an officer, you know, your power derives from the UCMJ and the oath of office. If those were not there, you couldn't enforce military good order and discipline through those channels. It would be a lawless society. So when you have a command that's unwilling to support Lance Corporal's decisions in peacetime and give them the power and the backing and the support that they need to actually make these things happen, then yeah, this is what you're going to have. You're going to have Lance Corporals in peacetime that have basically, corporals that are going to be powerless. And they result to that because it's easier to reserve power at a center core, the lieutenant, the captain, the major, the lieutenant colonel, than it is to defer that out to, you know, the bigger, broad, you know, Marine Corps, because it takes more mental energy to actually lead and to be there and to work with these guys and to show them. But we're not afraid to give a corporal, you know, basically the power of a governor in a combat situation, you know, where he is the judge, jury, and executioner as a corporal over human lives of a different country. Then he comes back to the barracks at San Mateo, and he can't tell Lance Corporal to clean his bathroom.
Right. How crazy.
I mean, how crazy
is that?
But that's the truth.
Right.
I mean, that's ludicrous. It's insanity. You know, and again, we fought against that. You know, you can say all you want about it, but your actions got to support your words, your verbal communication, and you got to back that up. But it's easier for the institution to centralize its power into smaller nodes. I mean, you're talking a very smaller population when you're talking about just all the lieutenants and the platoon commanders, not bigger broad when you're talking about all the fire team leaders. You know, now you're talking a huge number of people that you have to manage, right. You have to lead, you have to actually, you know, support and have communication with. It's just, again, it just pisses me off that we're having this.
All right.
Yeah, you want that?
No, I mean, it is. It's not the Marine Corps. I mean, it's, as you said, you used a couple of phrases that, you know, that all of us have heard. Not in my Marine Corps, right?
Yeah.
We don't join you. You join us. But it doesn't seem, you know, it seems like that's not, you know, that's not the standard anymore. That it is this, the whole, you know, again, and I hate to bag on millennials because we've seen them do so many great things in combat. But when you have that urgency, there's an environment that they go into that's harder. And again, to me, how we backed off it, I'm not sure, but the number of emails that I've gotten and the Marines I've talked to, they say the same thing. Yeah. And so this is the conversation I had here within the last month. So explain to me, you're getting ready to go to formation at 1300, right? Yes, sir. Right. Company gunnage formation. And so I'm Corporal McNamara. I'm hanging out in the rec room because I'm married. You're one of my Lance Corporals. Do you come by the rec room at 12:50, between 12:50 and 12:55 and tell me that, hey, I'm good? You just stick your head in, give me the thumbs up and keep walking. And I know you're going to be there so that when I walk out at 12:55 and I see the squad leader, he looks at me and I just give him thumbs up. He said, no. I said, what happens? He said, well, everybody shows up at 1300. And that's when the squad leader starts counting people. And he looks at me and says, hey, where's Muscleman? I said, I don't know. Text him. That's how that, he's like, yeah, that's more of how it works. I'm like, well, I don't know that Marine Corps where that would be allowed. That kind of stuff would be allowed.
Yeah.
To happen. I said, how does it work? I said, how does that work? And they're like, it's a fight every day. I was like, whoa. And doesn't it sound crazy?
It's beyond crazy. Yeah. That's
just simple accountability that, you know, that, you know, a unit goes through on a daily basis. So anyway. All right. You're to do a small engine update. I'm surprised. I think, and again, at the risk of sounding like an old guy, it can't be Burger King. It can't be have it your way. And I think the Marine Corps,
it started to go south when that big old movement back a while ago was, you know, you got to explain why they're doing these things. And that's good too. It's okay every once in a while to do that, but not every single time. You know, really it's like, why? Because I freaking told you to. You know, and it's okay every once in a while to say, hey, the reason why we're training this way or the reason why we're doing this is because this is our mission set and this is what we're preparing for and this is what we're going to do and that and yada, yada, yada. You can go through that and that's good.
Okay.
But not every single time. Why do I have to clean my bathroom? What? Why? I have to explain why that you have to maintain, you know, you have to shave every day or wear a clean uniform. I have to explain why to that. And that's where we're at. And, you know, if you're the guy outside of that bubble, you're this is the Mike Wishnia story all over again. You know, Wish was being persecuted because he was a forceful guy and he people tell him, hey, Sergeant Wishnia, Corporal Wishnia, get this done. Yes, sir. And he wouldn't put hands on people, but he'd be forceful in their voice and people complained about that. And then the complaint turned into action and people were like, well, you know what? The Marines don't like your leadership style because you're abrasive. We're going to hold NJP on you.
who makes that decision? We're going to punish that guy instead of, hey, you might want to do
you're
it. He tells
right,
you.
Man. And it's just clouded. You know, I had a lieutenant when I was in 1-5. We were deployed to Okinawa. I was a sergeant. I was a section leader. And we did a health and comfort inspection, you know, in the barracks. Mm-hmm. And I knew because I was a Marine once, too. You know, I was a Lance Corporal. And I didn't do these things, but I knew how Marines were and they acted. And in one of the vents, there was these metal aluminum vents, air conditioning ducts that were two Phillips screws. They used to unscrew those and hide all the contraband up in there because you'd search the room and not find anything. You know, and you're like, well, I just saw him walking in with a, you know, two bottles of alcohol, you know, 2/5 of booze. And so when I did the health and comfort inspection, I walked in there with a Phillips screwdriver and did everybody's vent and reached up there. And in one particular room where the guy had, this Marine was a Lance Corporal, you know, 4-year Lance Corporal. I think he was a PFC twice and a Lance Corporal twice. And I reached up in the vent and I pulled out 4 bottles of alcohol. You know, 4 bottles of 4/5, you know, the Jack Daniels of vodka, you know, hard alcohol, which you couldn't do it. You couldn't have hard alcohol. The rule was 6-pack per Marine in the, you know, in the room. And that was it. And so when we found this, you know, pulled it out, called the Marine and asked him if it was his. He said no, of course. And he was the only one in the room. And, you know, you could see the labels on there. The stuff was only a couple weeks old. And so I was like, okay, we've been here for 4 months. You're telling me this ain't yours. Who has access to your room? No one. Okay. So this was here before you got here? Yes. This shows that it was just purchased within a couple weeks. I don't know what you're talking about. We went to the lieutenant, and the lieutenant turned on me and said that I did an unfair inspection. Basically, I didn't do it because I didn't tell him I was going to search up there. That was not part of the search. And so now I'm being prosecuted. You know, the lieutenant wanted to run charges up on me and basically burn me. And let the guy go free. And luckily I had Royal Mortensen as my commander who pulled the lieutenant and said, you're absolutely insane. You know, you're on the brink of getting relieved right now. Is this what you want to do? And he
Back. Mike, afraid though, afraid to be in charge.
Yeah.
And you have, let me read you an email. Hey Mac, here's a story and I'm not going to give you my name. You have my email, but I hope you'll keep it private. This is within the last 60 days in my unit. A Marine Lance Corporal was absolutely shocked when I told him that I was going to non-rec him for promotion for corporal because he is repeatedly counseled on personal appearance. That is, his haircut and his uniform. He looks like ass on a regular basis. And he looked at me and said, quote, you're going to non-rec me for that? And he was absolutely stunned. How do you expect to get promoted to become a corporal when you can't do the things that you get taught in boot camp, for God's sakes? But that's not the best part of the story. The best part of the story was he was absolutely shocked that he would be non-rec for that. I don't know what planet they live on, but the sliding standards that we have in the Marine Corps today are making it absolutely impossible to lead. And something as simple as your haircut, shaving, and your uniform, when those get to be issues, we have a problem. And I can tell you, we have a problem.
Yeah. In fact, we used to have, when I was at division.
Mike, you're Lance Corporal coming up for corporal, and you can't get your hair cut, and you don't wear your uniform right, and you're surprised if you get non-rec'd. That's crazy, yeah. Land.
Yeah. But, yeah. Mac, this is that whole, okay, so we used to go around and talk to our NCOs and our staff NCOs and say, hey, document, document, document,
right,
document.
Right, right.
And so they would, the good ones. and that package would get to us, and, you know, we'd review it at the division level, and the general, in some cases, would rule that, you know, hey, we're gonna separate this Marine from the Marine Corps. We're gonna have him separate. He is no longer fit. He's contrary to good order and discipline. I mean, the whole nine yards. Everything was documented.
Right, right.
And we'd send that up to headquarters, Marine Corps, and they'd kick it back and say, not enough. What? What do you mean? What more do you need? Do you need the Marine's admission of guilt? Would that suffice? I mean, just, you know, just this over and over. Yeah, you're right. And it gets stripped away. It gets stripped more and more and more and more. And, you know, we sit there and look at each other and say, we're trying to give the tools to our young NCOs and our staff NCOs. And when we tell them these are the tools you need and they follow it, and then it gets kicked in our face, you know, it's like, what more can you do? Hell, you know, again, we were fighting for guys that had possession of a narcotic that had been in jail, and we were trying to separate them. And our higher headquarters said, no, retain. You know, like, what the hell is going on, boys? You know, and I'd always come back and say, you know, if that was at the time, I'm not going to use the Commandant's name, but if Commandant Smith, I'd always wanted to confront him and say, Commandant Smith, if your son was a corporal or a Lance Corporal in that unit, and this kid was his buddy, his fire team, and they were in combat, and your son lost his life because of the neglect of this individual, would that upset you? You don't think you would take a look and say, well, how did this guy get to that point? How did he get there? Where did we go wrong? Well, we go wrong by, again, not enforcing the good order and discipline of the Marine Corps. And part of that is getting a frickin' haircut. Having standards, shave, put a clean uniform on. Don't live like a pig. You know, the simple stuff. I don't have to tell you to breathe. That just comes naturally. But I have to sit there and tell you to get a haircut?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you know, and then, you know, the fact that I have to tell you to get a haircut, okay. The fact that you're surprised when that leads to you being not recommended for promotion is to me crazy. That's the crazy part of it. And I, and again, you know, Mike, I didn't know, honestly, bringing this up, because you and I really never talked about this. I didn't know if you were going to say, you know, Mac, you know, you're just being fuddy-duddy, you know.
No, I saw this coming, man.
Squad bay guy, blah, 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 fairy tale, man. Marine Corps is different. It's all right. They'll figure it out, blah, 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 blah. But it sounds like we've...
Mac, I was an ass when it came to living in the squad base. I was the biggest asshole. This is the company gunny, man. I'd throw... you want to live like a pig? Good. I'd throw all his shit outside of, you know, on the parade deck. There, go live out there. You want to live like a pig? You're not ready for the habitat of a human? I'll put a tent up in the back, in the woods, in the field, and you can live in the dirt like a pig.
And what happened?
Well, I had a command that backed me.
Right.
And
that was the Marine Corps, right? That was you teaching him about the standards.
Yeah, I didn't abuse him.
Right. The standards of, and you know, again, I go back to something a friend of mine told me here recently. Hey, life without consequences doesn't work. And then I want you to, I'm going to play a little clip from what Zick said. When I interviewed him about he's talking about going around seeing, I can't remember, 20-something different battalions when we were in Afghanistan, and the education he got, and what a great experience, you know, seeing some that did it well and some that didn't do it well. And so I want you to listen to this.
But we are on the road, as you know, like 21 days out of the month. It was this great experience getting out there and seeing Marines and sailors doing great things on the battlefield. But seeing the different units and how they do things, You know, some did it really well, some did it not as good. Some were more disciplined. That's where you saw what a disciplined unit looks like at that level. You know, you see all the little things you do to make it good, you know, to make a unit better on the battlefield. This makes it that much more effective. You know, you get it's a bigger perspective. I still think discipline is one of the biggest keys in combat, and I think Marines do it better than anybody.
I think it's one of the biggest keys, and then I talk about it's the biggest key in life, but it seems like that which he talks about, we're coming off that standard of discipline for the group at the in favor of more rights for you as an individual, which my own sense is I'm alarmed that sergeants are now alarmed that they can no longer affect younger Marines. And if you can't affect them, then you can't bring them to the group. They can stay in their own orbit. And you're telling me, yeah, that's right. You should be concerned.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, let's take a break, and we'll talk small engine repair.
Sure.
All right. Mike and Mike, on a Tuesday, Mike McNamara, Mike Musselman, and kind of talk to the subject that kind of popped up based on some emails that I've received, more of All Marine Radio on a Tuesday, coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Eagles, yeah, on All Marine Radio.
One, she's a friend of mine.
You an Eagles fan? Come on, you got to be an Eagles fan.
Yeah, I like Eagles. Don't let the
sound of your own. This is a great song too.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right, now we're going to talk small engines. Hold on, we got to listen to the part where. There's a girl in, Tucson, Arizona? Likes that? Where's the girl that's standing on the corner?
Well, I'm standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona.
Winslow, Arizona.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, baby.
That's right. Girls in trucks, man. You got to love that stuff. All right, so...
Ford truck, though.
In what, a flatbed Ford, right?
Yeah, it's got to be a Chevy truck.
Oh, please. All right, so give us an update on the small engine repair.
Oh, it's done. It's fixed. Right.
So what happened?
It was a jet, an injection jet on the bottom of the carburetor. It was a really small hole, and I didn't pay attention to it. But that was the one that actually sprayed the fuel up into the carburetor. So once that got cleaned out, man, first pull, it turned right over.
Really? So you never took it in. You did additional surgery after we finished up.
Well, I looked it up, and then I was like, okay. Did the research.
Now.
Which I normally do in the first part, but I thought I was better. And I thought, you know, it's easy, but when you take that apart, you're like, this is not as I thought. So
small engine repair, come on, can't be that hard. But is there Tell me about the small victories in life when you pull that thing and it fires up.
Yeah, that's a good time, man. That's like, yes, and, man over machine.
And what, Mike, you're in your garage by yourself, right?
Yeah.
But you have this huge victory in life.
Yeah. You have nowhere to celebrate it yet.
And you're so happy. So happy because finally, after this incredible string of losses to losing to life, fate, and whatever, man triumphs again. I love that stuff.
Over machine. Yep.
I lost.
We invented it. We own it.
I lost mine over the weekend, and I found out yesterday that you can't fix aluminum radiators. Throw them away and go get a new one.
Right.
Wasn't happy about it, but that's what I learned. So.
I knew that before even attempting it.
Aluminum?
Yeah. You can't. A lot of the newer stuff like that, man, you can't patch them. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. I should have called
it. As I said, go to a dump, go to a scrapyard, find one that had side damage, not front end damage, and then just take it out, pay the minimal fee, and get out of there.
Do you remember when you discovered that? How old were you when you discovered the salvage yards parts?
My dad did a lot of restoring.
Really?
Yeah, from day one.
What did he restore?
My uncle. Oh, he restores old Chevy pickups, like 1950, 1940s.
Wow.
Sedans. He does a lot of things. So yeah, he educated me real quick.
So you grew up a car guy?
No.
No? Your dad was,
no,
though.
But I grew up with the understanding of mechanics. So I'm a very mechanical mind. I can look at something from different angles, take it apart, and then understand how it works, and then put it back together. It just comes naturally to me. So it really worked. It helped a lot when, you know, being a gunner, working on weapons, doing all the weapons stuff. You know, I understood how everything worked. I'd just take it apart, look at it, understand the process of how, you know, the cycle works, and then the light bulb goes off, and then I can visualize it and then troubleshoot it.
What's the coolest vehicle that your dad ever restored? The one you like the most?
He built a chopper, a motorcycle, that was pretty damn cool. and he's driving a Ford truck right now. It's like a 1947, 1948. That thing is sweet. That is a beautiful truck.
You know what I love? One of the things I love about those kind of cars and older cars, I can remember going, this is in North Dakota. I can remember going downtown because, you know, the downtown merchants had put together this, I don't know what they called it. I might have called it Thunder on the Red or something like that, but it was just a car show. And so anybody with a car, you know, you could, you know, you entered it in and you got a stall and, you know, it was like on Main Street downtown in Grand Forks. And so what were they going to do? They were going to bring everybody downtown, the restaurants get full, all that kind of stuff, right? So they have all these cool, cool cars. Chevelles, Impalas, pickup trucks, you know, just the classic cars from when I was young. And then all kinds of different cars that guys, and I will tell you this, when you go to the Midwest or the rural part of the country, you have a lot of guys who restore stuff. And I think a lot more guys who restore stuff. And I think because, a lot of them are farmers, they work with their hands, they have some time during the winter, you see some pretty cool stuff. You see some pretty cool stuff. And so, anyway, on this day, there's all these cars out there, and I'm down there and just kind of checking them out. It's always fun. And then what happened was the weather changed and got into a tornado watch warning, probably a watch. No actual funnel cloud sighted, but, you know, the elements were ripe for it, and so they issued the tornado watch. And so they, and it started to rain a little bit. And with that, they all had to, you know, move their cars. And the sound of all those guys starting those cars up was awesome. You know how different
right.
the sound of a car was back then? Boom, boom, you know, and just that, just the deep bass sound of an engine. And so there was, I don't know, there were probably close to 100, 120 vehicles there. And when they fired up their engines, and then, you know those guys, right? They're car guys. So somebody revs their engine, somebody else got to, you know, they got to match that. But it was really cool. It was really cool. And I'm not a car guy like you were, but I just remember when I was a kid in the 60s, I mean, everybody worked on their car. You could work on all of them, right? They were of the technology that you could mess with them. And that's what guys did, man. Kind of, they got older vehicles and they tricked them out. And the other thing that everybody used to trick out was Volkswagen Bugs, back in the day. You know, they were really cool to put, you know, wide wheels on and didn't cost too much to do it. And, I'm a fan of it. I'm not a great, I'll tell you where I learned to be a mechanic was at, third LAR and first LAR when I was lieutenant, pulling engines, learn how it all went together. My dad wasn't a car guy, so I didn't really learn as a kid. And, but I learned the Marine Corps, the whole engine thing. So, pretty interesting. If you could rebuild a car, what car would you rebuild? Or a truck?
Probably, like you said, the older trucks. And the other one that he's working on, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's called Sedan Delivery.
Sedan Delivery?
Yeah. And it's an older one, too. It's around 1950, 1948, you know, in that same era. But they're kind of like the older kind that have painted signs on the side. It'd be
I just saw a picture of one.
Yeah, he's working on one right now. And they're sweet, man.
So it looks like the front's like a normal sedan of the era, and then it kind of goes to what I would call kind of a suburban, an old Suburban from back. And the one I'm looking at has like a solid panel. There's no windows in the back. There's other
right.
ones.
Right, it's a solid panel. And then a side opening back door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, those really cool.
Yeah, those things are awesome. And what year?
It's around the 19, it looks, if you look at a 1948,
right.
It resembles that.
Now, does he trick it out and lower it, or does he restore it to its original?
He restores it to the original.
Because that, to me, that's what looks the best. I love that.
Yeah. He restores it to its original look. Paint, everything.
Wow.
And then he's actually putting, you know, a delivery, a real delivery, whoever owned, you know, one that is a delivery vehicle, he'll have their, you know, company logo on the side.
That's cool. That's cool. The what did your dad do for a living after he got out of the Marine Corps?
He became a draftsman, architectural, like a research draftsman. So he'd draw up stuff and they'd build it, and then the company would sell it. You know, and so one of the things that he did was that a UV oven that would bake resistors flat on a circuit board, you know, because back in the day, resistors, capacitors were all round and they were raised. Right. So they would bake them flat onto the circuit board. So then electronics get smaller. And so some of his guys, they designed the actual oven that would do that. And then that oven then morphed into what now is pizza ovens. So, you know, and that was the big money. But since the company owned the rights, you know, the patents, so, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff too. The whole creative engineering process, and you know, you hear guys musing about something, and then kind of taking it to a draft board, and then making it real. And then to me, what I really thought was interesting was when they got to a problem that they couldn't solve, and then they kind of went into this other mode of, okay, we need to re-engineer that to make this happen. If we make this right. happen, then we could do that. And then you saw right. them, and they didn't have an answer, but they began the creative process that led to kind of changing the technology. I always thought it was very cool to listen to those guys talk that, you know, the technology of either making it smaller and
yeah, and they would run into an issue where they couldn't, something barred them, current technology barred them from going any further. Then they would look at what's barring us. And then they would research that and then redesign, re-engineer that device so it could then fix their problem and then they could go forward. So literally you're talking about people that, you know, you say change the problem. You know, if you can't solve the problem, change the problem. Change it to something that you can solve. And they really did. But he's always been gifted. He can look at something and formulate like an engineering solution to it and then fabricate it. You know, and he can see all of the potential problems, stress, you know, whatever, you know, load, and then come up with a redesign in midstream that would alleviate those problems. As he's going forward, he sees potential problems and then solves them along the way. So, yeah, he's always been gifted that way.
Interesting. No, I'll tell you what. I think I love that kind of stuff. In terms of that creative, looking at a problem and not seeing a problem, but seeing, okay, as Mike said, how do we change the way we're framing this to that leads to, you know, not only the solving of this, but opens up all this other stuff.
And
to me, it's...
Right.
It's,
and so, you know, a lot of people in life, you get to a point where you're looking at a problem and you're like, man, I don't know how to solve this. The mental concept of, well, change the perspective of how you're looking at the problem. So I always visualize, if you can put your problem on a table, you know, and you're looking at it, you only see one dimension of it. One side of it. Go around the table. Look at it from the back side. Go above it. Look at it from the top. Go from the bottom. Trying to visualize your problem as a three-dimensional object so you can actually move around it and look at it from aspects where I can solve it from this point. Oh, I see now. I can do it this way. It's kind of hard to do, but it, you know, if you can get to a point where you start visualizing your problems that way in a three-dimensional state, and then you can actually, in your mind, look at different aspects of it, different angles of it, then it becomes really easy to solve.
You know, it's interesting, Mike. I remember Tim Lynch, who you know, asking mm-hmm. me, we were talking about decision-making once, and in the middle of a discussion, he looked at me and he says, how do you do that? And I said, do what? He said, you don't look at it from the perspective that I think the rest of us, it's like you don't have the same like frame on your lenses. Your frame is doesn't see edges and walls because you don't respect them in terms of decision making. I said, you know, I think I learned it in college studying economics, where you had to identify the variables, and then what you do in an economics model is say, okay, hold the all three variables constant and we're going to move the fourth one. And what does it do to the model? Okay, now we're going to move the third one. What does it do to the model? What does it do when you move the third and fourth one together to the model?
Right.
And so what you're talking about is changing the way you're viewing it and then, you know, moving it around and looking at it, you know, almost in 360, you know, horizontally, vertically, and being able to kind of move it like that. And then the solutions become easier.
Right.
It's interesting how people learn that, because you just described through a completely different path the same conclusion. Interesting.
Yeah, it was the same way that I did things in the Marine Corps. Right. And you're right. I never respect. For me, there was no boundary.
Right.
There was no rules.
Who said we can't?
Yeah. Who says we can't do it that way?
Yeah. Who said?
Well, it's just not. No.
Get them on the phone.
Once you put boundaries on something, then your chances of success greatly diminish.
Right.
You can't have any boundaries. You can't set forth any physical or mental boundaries when it comes to decision making. There can't be any rules. You know, if you're trying to achieve victory, you're trying to achieve something, then that's what you want to get to. Then nothing else matters. How you get there, it doesn't matter. The path you take doesn't matter. The end result is all that matters, and that's solving the problem, getting to, you know, mission accomplishment, whatever that may be. And so you're right. And that was my big thing was, and I used to tell my guys, you know, I'd look at them and say, I want to find this thing. Well, it's not made anymore. I'm not asking if it was made anymore. I want you to find something like this. And I don't care if you have to, you find the guy who invented this. He may have another one in his garage somewhere in Indiana. His son may own it and not know he has it. I want you to, once you get to that guy's house, the inventor, and you ask him, hey, do you have another one of these? I want this. And once you get to that, and if you get to that guy's house and you talk to his widow or his son, and they say, well, no, we don't own any of that stuff anymore. We don't have any paperwork or notes or anything like that. Then I'll take that as no. But everywhere in there, I want this salt. I want this thing. Or I want you to find out, you know, again, call, find out the person who wrote this. I want to ask them questions. That's where we stop. That's where we get to. And a lot of times it never got to that point. We'd find something that worked and then we'd move on. And it was, but these guys would always like, well, that's kind of the impossible, sir. No, impossible is getting in a kayak, sitting in a kayak, and actually propelling yourself to the moon. That's impossible. You can't do it. Everything else is possible. You just cannot go to the moon in a kayak. It's not going to work. So everything else is possible. You just got to reframe it. Change the lens.
No, it's awesome. And teaching them that is pretty cool as they begin to see it.
Yeah.
As they don't see walls anymore. And when there is a wall, the next thing they say is, can we go talk to him? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's over there. Go talk to him.
Walls to me are, yeah. I can go over it, around it, through it, or under it. Those are my options.
Right, it's not going to stay there because we need to go. And, no. You know, here's the other interesting thing is the other thing that when you sit down and talk to, especially young leaders about this, it's like, do you think that he wants you to do it stupid? And they look at you. Trust me, he's not stupid. If he knew that this was the manifestation of what he said to do, he would lose his mind over it. Okay? So go. Go find him and talk to him. And then they come back and you look at him and you say, what did he say? He said to do it. You were right. And wanted to know how it got screwed up so bad. That's what he wants to know.
Yeah, those are the valuable lessons you learn with good leadership. And I was taught that at a young, early age, too.
Right.
You know, there, one, you never give up. You can give up when you're dead. You know, when you're dead, you can no longer accomplish the task. That's an excuse to give up.
Until then, strap it on.
Until then, yeah. Keep going. And like I said, walls, you can climb over anything. We've climbed over the tallest mountain in the world. We've conquered it. We went over it. We went under some of the deepest oceans in the world. We can accomplish anything if we put our minds to it. Anything, there is no such thing as a physical barrier. Now, you may have mental barriers. That's your own problem. But physical barriers don't exist. They're just obstacles. And like any other obstacle, you can go over, around, through, or under. There's a way around an obstacle.
I love that stuff, too. I love it when they come back and they said, hey, sir, the colonel, they said the colonel, blah, blah, blah. All right, you guys do this. I'll go talk to the colonel. Keep working on it. We're not stopping. Trust me. Look, I know him. I'll be right back. Come back, what, Mike, 15 minutes? All right, boys, let's go.
Yep, we're doing it.
What happened? What do you think happened? Come on, man. Smart guy, Marine Corps. Don't let stupid people, and that's the other thing, is you get, I'll call them stupid people.
Don't let stupid people, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't let uninformed people run your life.
Yeah. Stop you from doing what you know to be is right, smart, and in the best interest of Marines. Don't let them, ever roll them, right, like a cigar. Do it yesterday. Do not even hesitate because, oh, sir, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, we're not playing that game. Let's go, boys. So,
and I do miss that stuff. I miss confrontation. I do. I miss confrontation. I miss those discussions where you're in a room with somebody and they're just so strong-headed and they won't budge. And then you get the opportunity to prove to them that they're stupid. All we're doing now, boys, is you're playing the game of this is my basketball and I'm not letting you play with it. You know, and it's like, that's the holdout. That's what we're doing. We're playing a childish, immature game of we're behind the screen porch and you're in your house and you won't come out and play.
And we're going to do it in public.
Yeah, in front of everybody.
Okay.
It normally, most of the smart guys don't. They see that avenue you're going, and then they like.
But hey, Mike. Right. But conversely, just about all the dumb guys do.
Right? Yeah. But they just like to be dumb.
They do.
And nothing. I had no more. Some of the greatest satisfaction I had as being a Marine was pointing out in a verbal conversation stupidity. And everybody else got it, and they would look at that person. And then you'd see the person that were the subject. And then you'd realize in his mind right now, he's saying, shit, I'm the stupid one.
I'm the dumb guy.
When
did I become the dumb guy?
Yeah.
Oh, you've been the dumb
about
guy.
15 minutes ago. 15 minutes ago when you told me no.
Yeah, when you told me no. And this is the frustrating part is, and then I'll let you go, is it's not like they told you, hey, here's what I've been told. But I think you're right. I'm happy to help you. We're going to have to go talk to him because he's got to authorize it, right? Whether we're talking about a range fan or a different weapon system on a range, you know, whatever modification or whatever you're working on, those kind of things, or just wanting to do a different kind of training or maybe do something at night that we haven't done at night before, all it takes is normally one guy to say yes. And if he says yes, and it's normally guys aren't asking to do stupid stuff.
Yep.
Especially if they're quality guys. So, always fun. All right, what's on the agenda for today? You're going. You're volunteering tomorrow, so what's on the agenda for today?
I'm probably going to go out with... we're going to go look at some 45 magazines.
Nice.
Get some, yeah.
All guns, all the time. Let me read you an email. You can answer it, and then I'll really let you go. Hey, Mac, really, really interesting discussion today. I have a question, and hopefully before you guys get off today, how do you roll something like this back once you give it away? Mike?
You got to take it back. Yeah, how do you get it back? Take it back. It's got to be, right now, this is evolution. Darwinism is taking place in the Marine Corps. And Marines are evolving into a different subspecies that we don't really want. You got to eliminate that species, eradicate it, and then bring out what you want. Re-engineer what you want. But it's got to, man, this has got to be something that, I mean, it's got to come from the top down before it's too late. And I think in a lot of cases, we're a little bit past that. We're a little too late, I think. It's going to be a lot harder to roll this back.
Interesting.
Remember, it's like I used to say, how does an alcoholic admit that he's an alcoholic?
It just,
most of the time,
something bad.
It's got to be an emotional experience where they take a life, they do something. Very, very rare do they just come out and say, you know what, I got a problem. No, something has to happen in their life that grabs him by the heart emotionally and makes him change. So this is that same thing. So what? Marine Corps has got to identify that it's wrong. How do they do that? Something bad's got to happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe this Marine Unite thing is the precursor to that, where they realize, hey, how did this come about? How did this nurture into what we're doing right now? What happened to honor, courage, experience? These core values, where did they go wrong? And they take a deep, hard look, and then they realize, you know what? Maybe it's the way we're starting to treat our Marines.
Low standards and no consequences.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that's the road to nowhere. That's the road to nowhere. All right, man.
Absolutely. All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, there you have it. The Gunner. The one and only, Michael Musselman. Small engine repair specialist. Interesting. I had no idea where that discussion would go with him. He spent a lot of years doing that, too, leading like that. So, good dude. One of my favorite. Brigadier General David J. Furness. He's currently the head of the Marine Corps Office of Legislative Affairs on Capitol Hill. He's not a lobbyist, though, because that's illegal. What he does looks a lot like lobbying, but it's not. He'll tell you that. We'll talk current events with him tomorrow. We'll talk about some of these issues. UCMJ. We'll talk recruiting women. We'll talk higher standards for women, some of the stuff Kate Germano espouses, and we'll see if he has answers. So, first of all, thanks for listening. The interview with Sergeant Major Zikafus will start as soon as I finish, and we take a quick break, so about 2 minutes. So, if you missed it, you can certainly catch it then. So, have a great afternoon. All Marine Radio on a Tuesday. Done. Out. Later.